It's Thursday, February 1st. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is, first time in a while, Andy Behrens. Andy, what's going on, buddy?
It really is a hell of a day to talk ball. There's a lot going on. I am back from vacation. The last, half dozen NFL games I've watched with like a few drinks in hand at a bar. So like I'm really enjoying the NFL experience these days. It's so nice to not have to write your way through an NFL game and to just soak it in and just be like an idiot meathead fan at a bar. What a great experience. I'd never take it for granted, people.
Absolutely right. Yeah. Scott has gotten on me a couple times during the playoff recap shows, but there's still fantasy going on, which yes, there is for sure. There's still fantasy going on. And like, if you're playing fantasy contests, fantasy playoff contests, like, more power to you, all that. But yeah, I'm with you, Andy. Being able to just watch games and not have to worry about like, ah, man, this guy didn't get, you know, the targets that we were hoping for. Like, let me come up with a list of reasons, especially on our panic meter pod, Andy, for God's sakes. Like, let me come up with a list of reasons why it's going to be A-okay. No worries. It's nice to just consume games and be like, yes, Hey, this stuff really matters for the livelihood of these players and the success of the teams that they're putting out there. It is very refreshing. Love the playoffs for that reason. And we only have one more game left, man. I mean, we are on the precipice here of... Andy, I want to just heat check this take with you, actually, before we get into what we're going to talk about here today. I definitely do enjoy the real games more. Okay. Like, I enjoy the NFL regular season and playoffs, the actual season, more than the off season. And I know you do other sports content here at Yahoo, you know, you baseball, all that crazy people stuff, you know, God bless you. I hope you enjoy it. You focus on other things beyond football, but I'm all football 365, whatever. It's not that I enjoy the off season more, but am I a weirdo for like it being pretty close in terms of which two seasons I enjoy?
No, I don't think that's strange. I've only started looking at prospects beyond like what little I did during the, you know, during the regular like college season.
Non-Iowa players.
Iowa fan. So I'm watching an unusual amount of Big Ten games, right? I'm not watching college football with an eye toward who I want to draft next year or who I care about in Dynasty. I'm not quite there yet. That hasn't really happened for me until we get into like February and March. So I haven't done any of that stuff. But I do enjoy it. I like when we get to the, you know, and this is just like sort of a way that you would feel as a content creator, I guess. Like, it's such the pace of the regular season and the pace at which we have to sort of go about our day and have to get stuff done. And, you know, there's always another show to do and there's always another column that is due like in an hour or whatever. To be able to just slow down and really like be a little bit more thoughtful and be a little bit more nuanced about the way you approach the job is really fun and pretty satisfying. And the nice thing, you're in a somewhat different situation, but I don't have like a lot of football content demands on my plate during, you know, March and April. And I can take my time with some things and I can like, I don't know, I can kind of workshop some takes without actually having to spit them out there tomorrow or the next day or the next day. And it's really helpful. So so I like the work that is involved in the spring. What I don't like is like having to know about every team's cap situation. I don't particularly love I don't love NFL finances. I don't love breaking down who's got cap space and who doesn't. I don't like any of that stuff. But I do enjoy the draft. I do enjoy free agency. And I don't know who first said it, but I associate it with Evan Silva. Like, the idea that we're like entering the one phase in the season where teams cannot lie to us. Like, the decisions they make are like reflective of what they actually think their real needs are. I enjoy that, you know. That's a nice break.
Oh yeah. I mean, from a content creation standpoint, it's not even close. Like the off season, just because of what you said, where we get to do some real thoughtful and like nuanced analysis. And I definitely am very bullish on the idea that people are consuming more and more off-season, quote, mm-hmm. off-season football content, whether that's because of best ball games or Dynasty especially. I mean, I say this all the time, but the most popular time at Reception Perception is rookie prospect time and, like, second-year wide receiver. I mean, second-year wide receivers last year is actually the first time that it eclipsed the rookies. I mean, because people are just interested in the young players and stuff like that. And so there's still a big demand, I think, for content. And yeah, I feel... there's definitely a pressure for me, I think, at least to put out content in the offseason for sure. But you're right, just the thoughtful, nuanced analysis, not even close. But even just from like a entertainment factor, you know, we got coaching stuff, we've got free agents, we do have the wild, the enjoyable part of draft season, the unenjoyable part of draft season, where we get to there like the last 2 weeks, like, okay, I don't need to hear any more rumors, let's actually just get to the whole thing. I think it's a fun time to be a football fan all year round, which is why I love doing this podcast all year round, and why I love doing it with you and Andy. Why I love doing it with you, Scott, Dalton, all the boys, everybody. We're going to be coming on here in the off season as well. But Andy, let's waste no more time. We do only have one more game left, but we've had a really interesting and I think fun playoff series of games here. And I had an idea for this episode, which essentially we're going to talk about the 10 things that have happened in the playoffs that actually matter for projecting teams, players, fantasy situations for next season. Because Andy, my theory on this, and you could tell me if this is true, and maybe actually because of what you said, we turn off kind of our fantasy brains and we just become, hey, we're enjoying watching the games and this stuff, you know, we're just enjoying teams and players and maybe a few drinks, even Andy Barron's enjoying a few drinks during the game. I think that sometimes as fantasy analysts, we just like, and you know, this is going to happen with certain players that played 3 games in the playoffs, sometimes 3, 2, 1, whatever, like fantasy analysts aren't even going to mention those games. It's gonna be like, hey, in the first 17 weeks, the fantasy relevant weeks, this guy did this, this, and that. Yeah. Well, yeah, he might've had like 4 more damn games after the fact. And we just don't talk about that in the playoffs. At least I think that there is sort of a gap in fantasy analysis, which was the birth of this episode.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. I'm just looking at the list of topics that I have for this, and a couple of them, I guess I don't have anything that is entirely connected to something that I saw in the postseason, but they all like connect what we saw from a couple games in the postseason to like the tail end of the regular season. And you're so right. This is, you know, the games that we've had over the past 3 weeks and what's coming, like this is the literal last glimpse that we get of players in real game action before next season starts. And it should probably be the most meaningful slice of the season for us in terms of projecting what's about to happen. And yet we just kind of let it go. Because it's not, you know, it doesn't show up in the regular season stats when we do our when we start sorting players the following year. It's a wild gap in the analysis for many people.
Yeah, because it matters for the teams, right? Like they're going to be thinking about, hey, we got this performance from this guy in the playoffs. Like, what can it do? And other than like Gabe Davis scores 4 touchdowns in a playoff game, we never do that as fantasy analysts. That was the only time I can remember like a playoff performance being like something that actually drove a player's ADP in the next year. That was one of the very few ones. I don't necessarily have anything like that on my list here, like one player really took over or anything like that. But all right, let's waste no more time.
You better start with me because you actually just gave me a great segue.
Well, that was going to start with you anyway. So Andy, you tell me your first thing that mattered in the playoffs that you saw.
Yeah, let me be clear. I'm not personally saying that I think this matters a whole lot, but I think the fantasy community, the fantasy industry is going to try to will it to matter. So I don't mean this as a lesson so much as I mean it as a warning. I think we might do the 2022 Gabe Davis thing with Jameson Williams. Like, I think that might really happen. And I think people should steel themselves for it, right? Like, this could be one of those situations where, like, every fantasy expert has to choose a side. And maybe not. Maybe we learned from the Gabe Davis wars. I'm not sure. But it feels like it could develop into, like, one of those big Anchorman style fights where, like, we're all, you know, we're all on the playing field with this one. Of course, he scored a pair of touchdowns in the narrow loss to the Niners. He was great. He's been a big play guy since he came into the league. There are a lot of just Williams zealots out there who have maybe been waiting for a performance like this in much the same way that people were waiting for the Gabe Davis supernova game, which he gave us in the biggest moment. Against, you know, one of the best teams of the era, right? So, like, I feel like we may have just had that with Jameson Williams. Now, it wasn't like he's not getting a ton of targets. He's not getting a ton of touches necessarily, but he is going into what should be, you know, knock on wood, should be his first sort of normal NFL offseason where he's healthy and he's not suspended and there's no issues there and he's got Ben Johnson back. And, hey, this is, you know, like, I don't know. If you are somebody who has been really, really open to the idea that Jameson Williams can be a superstar at some point, off of, you know, he had one enormous collegiate season. We know that he's got significant athletic gifts, very fast, all that, explosive player. If you've been waiting for it, you know, you got a nice little taste against the Niners, and I think people are going to try to build that into something pretty big. Like, I think there's a chance that we see Jameson Williams going in like the fifth and sixth round in certain drafts next year.
Oh man, that's really scary. That thought that you just threw out there. So there were 10 receivers that scored more than 20 fantasy points so far in the postseason. Jameson Williams is one of them. He's the only one that did it on single digit targets, 9 targets, mm-hmm. 6 catches, 79 yards and a touchdown. Obviously, then he had the 42 yard run for a touchdown against the San Francisco 49ers. And yeah, man, I'm with you that I think, and it's crazy, we're now officially 2 years into Jameson Williams' career. A very weird career that it has been. And I still feel like he is one of the most confounding players in the NFL. But I don't really know where I'm going to fall down on the Jameson Williams wars if those are destined to happen in the NFL offseason, Andy. But here's what I do know so far. All caveats admitted that he's had injuries. He's had weird off the field stuff. There was the gambling suspension. He hasn't really had a normal NFL season or a normal NFL offseason yet mm-hmm. to this point. And that does matter a lot. Like, we just don't give that enough credit, that having a normal offseason, normal prep, all of that stuff, and just walking into the season as everybody else gets to, that can really throw off a player and throw off the trajectory of their entire season. That stuff really does matter. At the same time, though, Andy, I mean, I don't have him like fully charted out from this season, but I did chart out a few games at times this season, and like the route running and the separation's a mess, man. Like we're 2 years into his career and he's super, super raw. I think he could end up being one of those guys where you look at the big plays and you look at the big the yards per target or something like that, and you think, why doesn't he get more targets? And it's like, well, the evidence is all over the film why he doesn't get more targets. And the reason I think that matters, even though all the caveats I admitted, that I like Jameson Williams as a prospect. I graded him out as a first rounder, but not a guy that was within this in the same draft class, in the same tier of guys like London and Olave and Wilson, where it's other people like, oh, he's the best receiver in this class. I thought that even if he hit, I thought he had a chance to be one of those like low usage, high yield type of players. So even if he does get back on track in his NFL career, I'm still concerned that he might be you throw this guy throw the ball 5-6 times and you hope that one or two of those per game is a really massive play.
Yeah, I want to be clear that I'm never going to be the person who's taking, and I don't know that this will happen, but I'm not going to be the person who's taking Jameson Williams in the fifth round, in the sixth round, anywhere in that vicinity, because I think he's ultimately going to end up, you know, I always think that the most likely scenario for most players probably looks a lot like what we just saw. And he probably ends up as one of those guys who's sort of a best ball only type. And there are moments within the season where the true believers get to sort of pound the table and say that they were right all along, right? And then the next week is two touches, 21 yards. Like, I think it's going to be like that. In kind of the same way that Gabe Davis gave us, you know, what, like after the Gabe Davis wars, he gave us a season where everybody could claim partial victory, right? Like it wasn't great, but like he still had some really nice moments. He had a couple games that you know, might have been week winners for you, but it was basically the same Gabe Davis experience. And it just so happened that he left us on the greatest game of his career. And we were like, oh, well, that's, you know, he's clearly trending up based on, you know, one data point and ignoring the way that he finished the regular season. I just think there's a good chance that some of that is going to go on with Williams. Maybe it doesn't. Again, maybe we've learned. I also think that unless, you know, something unforeseeable happens in Detroit, there's just simply no path for Jameson Williams to be like the number two in that offense. Like that's just not going to happen. Like they're running it back with everybody they just had. It's a great cast. You know, I don't know how you find 10 opportunities a game for Jameson Williams in that offense, given everything else around him. So I ultimately, I don't think that happens. I think he's kind of a poor man's Will Fuller, maybe. I don't think it's going to be great, but I think there are going to be some people who are really paying an expectant price.
It's funny that you say that about there's really no room for opportunity there for Jameson Williams, because I think this actually perfectly dovetails into my first point here. And I'm going to swoop three teams into this. So and you can, if you still have stuff on this, that's totally fine. We can go for it anyways. But I regret to inform you that Detroit, Buffalo, and Baltimore, and I mean, maybe even other teams that were in the playoffs, but definitely those three teams still really, really, really need another wide receiver. All three of those teams to me, and not in to varying degrees. Sticking on Detroit here for a second, like for all of the consternation that that people had over Dan Campbell's fourth down decision making and all the other rough breaks that the Lions got, like Josh Reynolds catches a couple of those balls and like we're probably not having those conversations. We're going to get to see what Jameson Williams does to follow up his best career game, right? Because the Lions are going to be in the damn Super Bowl. And Josh Reynolds is a fine player, but he's a fine player. I think they could do better at their possession receiver spot than Josh Reynolds. Like, I think of all of these teams, they're probably the one that needs it the least because they still have Laporta and Jahmyr Gibbs. And I do think Jameson Williams can probably give him something, but although I don't think you can rely on him to be like your clear-cut number two just wide receiver at this point. I think you need another body there, like a big possession X receiver. And there's going to be a lot of those guys available in the draft this year. They need one. Baltimore absolutely needs one. You know, Odell Beckham, they basically didn't outright bench in the playoffs, but they didn't play him very often. They certainly did not feature him at all. He's a free agent. Nelson Agholor is a free agent. I don't think you can count on Rashad Bateman to be like one of your starters. Maybe he ends up being that guy, but I don't think you can just full on count on it. And same thing of Buffalo, like regardless of what happens with Stephon Diggs, Gabe Davis, a free agent, their playoff loss absolutely showed that they can't be throwing balls deep downfield to Trent Sherfield in the playoffs next year. Like they need, I think they're ready for their next big swing at wide receiver in the Josh Allen era. Like they can keep Steph Diggs and that's fine, but they need to make like a trade up the draft board or something to try to get one of these A-tier receiver prospects or something like that, because they need another one. So these target distributions are already going to be tight on those teams. If these guys build the team the right way in the offseason, it should be even tighter.
Yeah, this is a great point. It didn't ultimately make my list, but I thought about this with the Ravens pretty hard. Like, they have a dire need. I think for receiving talent, they're probably gonna you know, almost like a crazy percentage of the league's running backs are gonna be available this offseason. So I'm confident that they're gonna find a backfield fix. It is much more difficult to address wide receiver in free agency, because the biggest names who should technically be available probably going to get tagged. You know, all of them seem likely to return to last year's teams, except for maybe Marquise Brown, who's probably not going to be a Raven next year, right? Like, exactly. You know, there's not like an obvious free agent that seems likely to go to Baltimore. So they probably have to address it through the draft. We'll see how they do that. But I fully agree with you there. The the point on Buffalo, I guess, just, you know, not to necessarily skip ahead to one of my other points, but one of my other things, one of my other lessons from this season, again, not even so much a lesson as a big yikes, Steph Diggs, like, this is a, I don't know if it's a problem. What I wrote down for myself was that there's zero chance now, I think, that we're drafting Steph Diggs in the first round next year. I think that's gone. I don't know that we're drafting him in the second round either, because when I look at the names of the receivers that I have as like round two fantasy receivers next year, I don't think I have Diggs ahead of Puka Nacua. I don't think I have him ahead of Nico Collins. Like, I'm going down the list and it's not looking good for Steph. Obviously we all know the moment that he left us with, in the final game of their season. It's like, I don't think it's a stretch to say that it's not just like a season altering play, a franchise altering play. It's like a legacy altering play, right? Maybe the best ball that Josh Allen threw all day goes through his arms, in a game changing situation. So just really rough. And that was perfectly in line with everything that we had seen from the last like 2 months. Right. I don't actually know. It's the Diggs question to me is really difficult to answer because I don't know. I don't feel like it. I mean, I know that it aligns with the OC change, but I can't make myself really feel like that is the actual cause of Diggs's slump, because he, you know, okay, the targets went down a little bit, but the target share did not. They just kind of, they reconfigured the offense a bit, and they obviously ran the ball a little bit more and they were a little more balanced and all that, but he was still seeing plenty of opportunities. And, you know, I'm not a film grinder in the sense that I am just all 22ing the shit out of every Bills game. But I am, you know, like, I saw all of Steph Diggs's opportunities and I did see him run by people. And I do feel like he can still separate. I don't feel like he's dust, but he can catch the ball like for a month and a half, 2 months there. His catch rate over the last 8 games, the regular season, is like 57%, which is just not who he is. Right. He's like the best years of Steph Diggs have been, you know, catching 3/4 of the passes that come his way, 70% of the balls that come his way. Contested situations, he was terrible. And then again, the potential like hinge point in the Chiefs game, ball goes through his arms. And they can't, like, they're a team that's in one of those cap situations where, like, yeah, you can run it back with everybody, but they don't have a lot of ways to, like, if they were to let him go, they don't have a lot of ways to fix it other than the draft. So they've got to take a swing on somebody that they think can be like the next great receiver for the Bills. So to tie it back to your point.
Yeah, I think if there's a, there's a couple different things here. One, from just like a vibes perspective, like, maybe it's just time for them to go their separate ways, right? Like Steph Diggs and the Bills. I think that's entirely possible. But let's just live in the universe where there is no vibes based problems and like he's back on this team next year or whatever. I think that when you look at, because I agree with you, by the way, that it does conveniently line up with the OC change, like his sort of drop in production. But I'm not sitting here thinking like Joe Brady got on the job and was immediately like, you know what I need to do? Get Stephon Diggs out of this offense. Like, yeah. I think there is a 0.0% chance that is what happened inside the Buffalo Bills building this year. However, I do think that, you know, and I've theorized about the injury. I think there's a chance that might be the cause of it. I'm curious, like, Diggs is always a guy, regardless of how cryptic he's been, he has almost always been around and available at Super Bowl Radio Row. Like, I'm curious if he's making the rounds this time next week, because there has been so much weirdness about the end of his season and stuff like that. So maybe we find out more from Diggs in the next couple of weeks here. I think that's possible. I would note, like, going back and actually watching some of these games, you're right, his target share was definitely kind of the same, and overall, like, his A dot looks kind of the same, but it's a lot of like short screen, like, design touches, and then all like go routes and post routes and corner routes. It was really kind of nothing in the middle there, in like the middle chunk of the field where Diggs used to be like a dominant player. Yeah. And that makes me think more like, were they using him as a decoy? But then at the same time, when they would need something from him, like at the end of the Chargers game, I can think about that, like, final drive, they went to him all the time. And Josh Allen, first thing out of his mouth at the end of the game, was like, yeah, I went to Steph Diggs all the time on third down. He was huge on third down, even though Gabe Davis was the one who had this like monster game, right? So I just think there's more to meets the eye with the Stefon Diggs situation here. Because I agree with you, I don't think he's dust, but I think there's something up there from like either a personality standpoint, or just a vibe standpoint, or injuries and like why he was made sort of a decoy at the end of the season. I will push back on you on like legacy altering play. Like, let's not forget, this is a guy who had one of his first legacy deciding moment was the Minnesota Miracle. So, you know, I mean, it's definitely a missed opportunity, but it leaves a bad taste in your mouth.
I guess I meant it not
sticking up for a player. I
meant it not specifically for him so much as like, man, that like, think about the way that like, I don't know, another Super Bowl appearance would change Josh Allen's.
Right.
Not that Josh Allen has a perception problem,
I see what you're saying.
This is a legacy swing for a handful of players who aren't going to get that Super Bowl back.
Now, I see what you're saying. That is a good point, that like history altering, like, you know, if he catches that, potentially we're talking about a very different game. That is for sure. And he actually hasn't been that great in the playoffs generally to kind of go to the theme of our discussion here. He hasn't necessarily had these like big playoff moments in a Buffalo Bills uniform. And I think Bills fans would actually tell you that pretty openly about Stefon Diggs. But yeah, he's going to be a really interesting one. I think kind of our two points together there. Your point two, my point one is just that I think there's going to be a lot of changes in that Buffalo Bills receiving room for the second, maybe third straight year. So we'll have to see what happens there before we rank out all these players. All right, I'll give you another one here. And this one kind of another one similarly with Stefon Diggs, I think, is a very obvious thing here. I think it will be discussed more than you typically would think. This snuck by people in the playoffs just because of how famous this player is. But if you look at just the end of Travis Kelce's regular season, you're like, oh yeah, this guy is at the cliff, right? 28 yards against the Patriots in week 15, 44 yards against the Raiders in week 16, 16 damn yards against the Bengals, one of the worst teams against tight ends all season long, 16 yards against the Bengals in week 17. Oh man, like, it's not looking so good. I guarantee you're going to see fantasy analysts throw that out at the beginning of next year if Travis Kelce doesn't retire with his brother here in the next couple of weeks. But don't forget what he did in the playoffs, where literally he's been one of the most productive players across the entire postseason. 27 targets, 262 yards, and 3 touchdowns. Like, he kind of embodies why I think it's important to look at these playoff games and kind of lump that together. I don't know where I will stand on Travis Kelce next season, but I think if you do analysis without including these playoff games, like, you're being disingenuous about it.
This is such a good point. And I actually, like, in the list that I created, I tried to avoid the Super Bowl teams, but I wrote this thing a couple days ago on guys who I think like their value has risen and fallen during the postseason. And it's kind of crazy to suggest that like Kelce should go in there, but I almost included him in that piece, because if you'd asked me a month ago who the tight end one was entering next year, I would, you know, I have an Iowa bias, so I would have said, I'd probably still say Sam LaPorta. But I like, I would have allowed for an argument for Trey McBride based on the way his season concluded and what we might see there next year. I would have allowed arguments for other players. I didn't in that moment think that there was a particularly great, it's stupid, right? Like, he's one of all time inner circle tight end, but I was like, okay, there is a very compelling case right now that we are actually in the decline phase that people have been predicting for Travis Kelce. And maybe he's not in that conversation. Now he's so clearly in that conversation. He's probably the tight end one. He's definitely, you know, he obviously resides in the top tier at the position. I think he has company in the top tier at the position, which has not been the case for a few years. But man, you want to talk about like somebody like reclaiming the throne at his spot. That is exactly what Kelce has done. He's coming off a perfect game, right? Like he's coming off just an absolutely flawless game in the biggest moment, a fantastic end to his season. I remember thinking the same thing last year, like, man, he was so good in the postseason. Like, it, you know, and a player his age, you're always kind of on the lookout for a decline. And even if he has like one game where he drops a couple of balls, you're like, uh-oh, is this it? And he was so perfect last year. And that's all we've seen to this point too. And maybe this is legitimately a case where it's, I don't know, you see this in the NBA sometimes. It doesn't usually work out in the NFL where like, I'm not going to say that he's like, you know, he's at half speed through the regular season, but man, great players. They get to the most important weeks, and they do really know how to summon, you know, the very best of which they are capable. And that is what we've seen from him. It's been awesome to see. Like you'd almost forgotten what vintage Travis Kelce looked like, but this is definitely it. I also thought that he's an example of somebody who was clearly playing through some stuff during the regular season.
Yeah.
It's not going to surprise me if he needs like one or two surgeries when we get into March. And it's, I agree with you. It wouldn't be, I don't know, there's some percentage chance that if they win this thing, he walks away with his brother.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like, we might be talking about, don't forget about this with Travis Kelce next year, and he just doesn't end up playing next year because he retires with his brother, or he just retires on his own. Like, I think those things are on the table here for Travis Kelce. And, you know, he's clearly, I don't know if you've heard, he's got some stuff going on, you know, away from the football field. So maybe his focus is elsewhere. And by the way, if his focus is elsewhere, that's totally fine. I all things considered, I get it. So it's funny because I think you hit the nail on the head there with the Kansas City Chiefs, that we're not saying they're sleepwalking through the regular season, but they might be more so focused on the games that matter. They're at that point in what do you want to say, dynasty, just franchise building in general. The Patriots got that way at times, where it's like, yeah they're going to suck every September. They're going to be a mess to watch every September, because then, number one, who gives a damn about September? They're still going to be playing in January.
Yeah.
We all know that. And two, like, they're just kind of trying to figure stuff out. I think the Chiefs pushed it a little bit this year with the "we're figuring things out" on offense phase of their season. But yeah, Kelce missed week one, but this playoff run, I'm glad you brought up the previous playoff run, it's eerily similar so far, and he's got another game here to add on to it. But like I mentioned, the stats up top, last playoffs, 3 games, 31 targets, 27 catches, 257 yards, 4 touchdowns. This year so far, 3 games, 27 targets, 23 catches, 262 yards, 3 touchdowns. So this is a story we have seen before with one Travis Kelce.
Yeah, that is flawless stuff too. And I do like give the Chiefs credit, because it took a while, understandably, but they did get to a point where they were finally like, listen, we gotta, and some of it perhaps injury related, but they reached a point where they were like, man, we gotta cut this Kadarius Toney and Sky Moore and Justin Watson stuff out of the, like, these are not productive pass attempts, and we gotta reduce our dependence on the worst receivers on our roster, right? So like they've built the thing out of Pacheco and Kelce and Rashee Rice, and here they are.
All right, give me another one from your list here, Andy.
This isn't even like, I don't know, this isn't like a lesson that we can, I was specifically tasked with coming up with lessons from the postseason, and I keep giving the caveat that this isn't really a lesson, and this is another one, but I just want to throw out there, because it's funny, we were talking before the pod started about how it's easy to forget that the Philadelphia Eagles were actually in the playoffs this year. Like by the end of the regular season, they just did not feel like a playoff team at all. And of course they were dismissed just ingloriously. But they were technically a postseason team. And I just want to point out that what they have done to their coaching staff is the least that needed to be done. I can't think, just off the top of my head, I can't think of many examples of teams, honestly, across all the professional sports, I can't think of many examples of teams where the gap between the talent level of the individual players on the roster and the actual outcome for the team was this great. Like, what a wild finish to their season. They ended the season losing in consecutive games to the Cardinals, the Giants, and the Bucks. And not even competitive against the Bucks in the playoffs. It's shameful how the defense performed. It was shameful how the offense performed at the end. So I think that, you know, I think the coordinator changes were much needed. And again, the least of what that team needed to do.
Yeah, I mean, listen, they were kind of trying to do the Vic Fangio tree stuff. They just went and got Vic Fangio. I think that's a great move on defense.
Yeah.
And we are, I keep saying this, but we are going to have a full pod after the Super Bowl breaking down all of the coaching moves. So we're not necessarily going to hit on that like fully in detail with any of these hires or what's gone on. But that was obviously a great one. And on offense, like, the more I've thought about them hiring Kellen Moore, man, what he does is really different than what the Eagles have been doing the last 2 years. So I kind of can't wait to see, especially with receiver usage. I mean, in Dallas, and they kind of tried to do this in Los Angeles, but they, you know, they just had injuries and stuff there. They're pretty good about kind of designing plays like to their slot receiver, obviously with Keenan Allen and then CeeDee Lamb, but like AJ Brown and Devontae Smith can do a little bit of that. Full transparency for the listeners, we were actually supposed to have an interview with AJ Brown and Devontae Smith on this podcast, but for reasons beyond our control, that's only going to be video stuff. So there wasn't time within that to flesh out a full conversation about, hey guys, receiver usage, you know, deployment, just because of the structure of it. There's going to be video stuff from it. You can find it on Yahoo and socials and stuff like that. But I would actually love to flesh that out more in terms of how guys were used in Kellen Moore's offense versus how they were used in Brian Johnson's offense last year. And man, I think like if this team can figure things out structurally on offense, Andy, there's actually a lot of room for improvement there for what those, like just how those receivers were deployed last year versus how they could be deployed this year, regardless of how good you feel Kellen Moore is at being an offensive coordinator.
Yeah. And it's like, I don't know, it's kind of hard to argue with his results in Dallas. I don't know. This might not be right. I always think of, to whatever extent a coordinator can be a streaky coordinator, I always think of Kellen Moore that way. Like I think Kellen Moore just like pitches a shutout, and sometimes I think he's one of the more disappointing offensive coordinators in the game. Like, yeah. And I just, you know, it's weird. I don't feel that way about many other coordinators, but he does like. There's enough that he gives you, like a lot of bunch stuff and like a lot of stacks and like things that I think can be really helpful to Devontae Smith specifically, right? Things that make it impossible, like scenarios where you can't jam everybody, right? And I just think he can get, I don't know. I think he can really, I've been thinking a lot about that team and what it should have been. And I think there's a lot there that can really be particularly helpful to Devontae Smith. And that's probably somebody I'm going to be really in on next year. But mostly I can't believe where the Eagles ended up, and they needed to do at the very least what they've done.
I like that take about the bunches and the motion too. Like there's been some times where Kellen Moore's been very proactive with the motion use in Dallas. You hit it on the head though, that I agree with you. Sometimes I'm like, man, Kellen Moore's got some great stuff here. And sometimes I'm like, come on, Kellen. Like,
yeah,
he's definitely a, which probably just makes him a perfectly middle class to good offensive coordinator, like a guy that just vacillates between really frustrating moments and really great moments, which is probably most of the league. But I do think that, yeah, that stuff in particular would probably be really good for a guy like Devontae Smith. And they've done some of that with AJ Brown at times, but not just static, like outside routes and stuff like that. I think there's more to Kellen Moore, the offering there for these receivers. So that's a really good one. I'll actually go to Kellen Moore's old team, the Dallas Cowboys. Pretty easy to remember what happened to them in the NFL postseason. I don't think a lot of people will be forgetting that. But my take here about this whole thing is the Cowboys, they didn't change a thing. I mean, they lost Dan Quinn to be the head coach of the Washington Commanders. Certainly the Commanders' first choice, no doubt about that. That was their plan all along, was to hire Dan Quinn. No question in anybody's mind. That was exactly what the Washington Commanders wanted to have happen. But on the offensive side of the football, the Dallas Cowboys did not change a damn thing after getting blown out by the Green Bay Packers. And Andy, purely for our selfish fantasy football reasons, that is a great thing. I look, I don't know what the plan would have been for the Dallas Cowboys had they fired Mike McCarthy. Were they going to hire Mike Vrabel? Were they going to hire Bill Belichick? Again, maybe those guys would have helped take the Dallas Cowboys to the next level and like not have an embarrassing playoff loss and maybe even go to the Super Bowl. Maybe those guys would have done that. We won't know, at least not this year. That we won't know that, but for 2024 fantasy football, like we want Mike McCarthy as the head coach of this team. We don't care, Andy, if they spend all year blowing out bad to mediocre teams and they lose in the first round of the playoffs. I don't care about that. If I'm going to spend a top five pick in fantasy on CeeDee Lamb, that doesn't matter to me. I don't care. But you know what I want? I want him in the exact same position, the exact same role, doing the exact same stuff he was doing in 2023. That's what I want out of CeeDee Lamb. I don't want Dak Prescott having to learn a whole new offense. You know, I don't want him playing in Josh McDaniels offense or something like that. Okay. Yeah. I want him playing in that offense. This Cowboys team is really fascinating at this point too, because they have a lot of guys that are up for contracts. Are they going to extend Dak Prescott this offseason? Because if they don't, they can't franchise tag him next year. He might be going into this season with just like Kirk Cousins vibes, right? Where, hey, he could be a free agent next year. And by the way, the Steelers would pay Dak Prescott $50 million to be their quarterback right now. So just wrap your mind around that. CeeDee Lamb needs a new contract. Micah Parsons is up for an extension. They're a fascinating team right now because it's kind of like, and Mike McCarthy, I think we can all agree, is coming in on the hot seat. There's the next 24 months for the Dallas Cowboys are going to be super fascinating to think about from a real NFL perspective, especially because they didn't make this coaching change. But purely for our stupid fantasy purposes, Andy, I love they didn't make this coaching change, okay? This is good news for us.
This is a really good point that I'm almost embarrassed I hadn't considered, right? Because we were, you know, everybody just like sort of licking their chops like wolves after they lose that game in the fashion that they did. We're like, okay, who's going to be the next coach of the Cowboys? What does Jerry Jones do? This is so exciting. And then he didn't do anything. And you were like, oh, that's not the Jerry Jones I know. And then we kind of forgot about it. But man, you're right. Like, you're absolutely right. We want fantasy purposes only. We want this just to roll into next year exactly as it looked in the final like three quarters of the season, where they just built the whole thing out of CeeDee Lamb. And Jake Ferguson really erupt. Like, Jake Ferguson goes into next year as a top five, top six tight end. He was great. He was seeing volume. Dak was great for fantasy purposes. We have a running back position that is going to get a lot of touches. It's probably not going to be Tony Pollard. I don't know. It could be Tony Pollard. But again, like, there's dozens of really good running backs who are available. Really good might be strong, but there are a lot of really good ones. And then there are some good ones. And then
a lot of guys you know.
Yes.
A lot of names you know.
A lot of brand names out there. And I don't know, like, it's going to be a huge game of musical chairs across the league. I'd be surprised if somebody worse than Tony Pollard lands in Dallas, right? Like, we've got Derrick Henry available. We've got Josh Jacobs available. We've got Saquon probably available. Like, all these guys are out there. There are some really exciting names that could get dropped in there. And if they just get dropped into Tony Pollard's workload, we're going to be drafting them in the second round. Right. You're right. But this is actually the best case for fantasy purposes, even if it was kind of a boring outcome.
Yeah. Tony Pollard, according to Fantasy Points data, third in expected fantasy points in 2023. I don't know if you know this, but if you drafted Tony Pollard in the second round of drafts, you know he was not the number three back in fantasy football.
Somewhere so Dalton Del Don is screaming, "My process was good. I nailed it."
Or just yeah. So the process was good. The role is good. I agree with you that whether it's a brand name veteran running back, I think maybe more likely like somebody in the draft. I know it's not supposed to be a great running back draft class, but like, even if one of the better backs in the class, you drop him into this situation, that's probably good. Because again, this is a good situation. I think the fact that McCarthy and Brian Schottenheimer and all these guys are back, we're just going to probably get the same offense from last year. Although Pollard's probably gone, Gallup's probably gone. There's some opportunity for some new players here, and all the guys that we know should remain pretty static. All right, I think we should each have two more if we're sticking from the 10 things you need to know. So, Andy, give me another one of yours.
I'll just tell you, I feel terrible about this because I didn't like prioritize my five things, and some of mine dovetailed so neatly with what you had just said that I've put myself in the unfortunate position where my final two things are both nice things that I have to say about the Packers. And that is really making me uncomfortable, but I'll just spit them out. My first one is that, and I don't think I really thought of their receiving core this way until we actually got through the postseason, but man, and this feels weird because they don't have like a superstar on top of that team's receiving core, but like Green Bay might have the deepest receiving core in the league, all the way down to guys like, you know, Heath and Bo Melton. And including the rookie tight ends, Musgrave and Tucker Kraft. Like, I like all of these guys. Every wide receiver on that roster would probably be the second best wide receiver on the Bears, is how I think of them. Dontavian Wicks has been uncoverable for like 2 months, and he's a part-timer on that team. You know, they're so deep. They're so good. I'm sure there are some Green Bay fans who will think that this is me, like it's a kind of sly insult to Jordan Love. I don't mean that either. I've said 1,000 really, really nice things about Jordan Love. I think he's great. I'm stunned at what they've done with this receiving core. And again, like, they might not have that one guy who just straight up commands, you know, 160, 170 targets a season, but they literally have 7 receiving threats who can beat you in any given week. And, you know, a couple of these guys are going to make leaps, right? I don't know if it's Wicks. Mm-hmm. If Reed makes a leap, look out. You know, Christian Watson, if he figures some things out and just stays healthy for 16, 17 games, look out. This receiving core is just loaded in a pretty unusual way. Like, it's not, I don't know. I've been trying to think about who, like, what are the receiving cores around the league that are this deep? And I don't think there's many that go like 7 guys where I trust them all.
No, you're right. By the way, Green Bay Packers fans are going to be pissed because James Coe and I did a video on Instagram and talking about this receiver room. And he asked me, like, should Green Bay be good with what they have at wide receiver? Because James is saying, to me, I think they have a lot of average to above average players to throw at you, kind of implying what you're saying, that it's a deep group of a lot of guys, but maybe no superstars. He's like, but do they have anybody special? And Packers fans were furious that you would say none of these guys are special. And I went on to say in the video that I think that Jaden Reed has superstar potential, and I love Dontavian Wicks. But again, just the idea that none of these guys are superstars yet was just too much for Packers fans to handle. I thought that was rather funny, even though generally the video was incredibly complimentary to their receiver room for what you just said, that they have so many guys that they're going to throw you. I actually had my first thing off my list here was sort of on this receiver room, because mine was like the fact that Romeo Dobbs had the playoff run that he did, which was another thing that everybody in the comments pointed out, like, bro didn't even mention Romeo Dobbs and he's our best receiver because he had the best playoff run. Like, I don't know that means he's going to be the best receiver on this roster in the future, but he was awesome in the playoffs. 10 catches, 234 yards and a touchdown in their 2 postseason games. Destroyed souls in the Dallas Cowboys win in the wild card round. And he was awesome. And like I said, I think that if all these guys stay healthy and hit their potential, which stay healthy, Christian Watson hit their potential, Wicks and Reed, like, I think he might be their 4th best guy. Yeah, I don't know that he's going to end up being the 4th best guy, but that's complimentary to the whole room. And like you said, the tight ends, these guys like Melton, who just popped up out of nowhere, man. I mean, I think it's almost like, in a way, it's, man, I'm really excited about this Packers receiver room. And part of me is also like, is it a cautionary tale for how many guys they have that we can't really get too far over our skis with like 1 or 2 of them? Because how much opportunity is there really going to be there, even if Jordan Love is a stud? And I think Jordan Love is a stud.
Yeah, no, fantasy-wise, it ends up maybe being one of these situations like, you know, a version of what the Saints used to be with Drew Brees in the years where, like, you just didn't know what receiver it was going to be that popped in any given week. Because they're, you know, because they had like 3-4 guys that were really, really good and could blow up at any moment. And I mean, it just, I don't know, did like Bo Melton actually might have had the single game yardage high for Packers receivers this year. And if everybody's healthy, he's not even going to play, right? Like, they're just like
practice squad guy. He was a practice squad guy.
Like, for your like number 6, number 7 receiver to be league average is crazy. That's crazy good, you know? And I feel like they got 4 guys who are just solidly above league average. And again, like, if it's a criticism to say that they don't obviously have like a Justin Jefferson, CeeDee Lamb level player in the receiving room, okay, fine. That's one of the hardest things in the NFL to find. So they don't have that. But I don't think there's another team where I trust number 6 as much as I trust it in Green Bay.
All right, I'll give you my 4th one here. Like I said, the Packers one was my first one off. I'll talk about the Bucs here. The Bucs have a better young core than we think. I think that we look at this team and we think like it's an aging team, right? Because Baker Mayfield's like a, I don't want to call him a retread, but like he's a guy who's been cast around the league, whatever. He's not like a new face. You know, we think of them as some of the leftovers of the Tom Brady run, but like this was a pretty young team this year. This wasn't like an aging roster. Some of their most impressive players, you know, Antoine Winfield's been, and they're a tough team to figure out because they have three guys who like they absolutely must bring back as free agents in Baker, in Mike Evans, and Antoine Winfield. That's tough when you have three guys that you must bring back because how can you bring all three of them back? You only have one franchise tag available. We'll see how that pans out. But like Tristan Wirfs is still a young player. He made an excellent transition from right tackle to left tackle. Luke Gadecki was low-key really, really good in the playoffs and to finish the regular season. Kalijah Kancey was a home run first round draft pick. Yaya Diaby, another rookie that gave them a ton of run this year. Rashad White, I can't figure out where I'm going to stand on that guy in fantasy next year. No clue, but he is a guy that was super productive for them. Great in the offense. And he's only a second year back. Like he could potentially be getting better. You know, Trey Palmer is a rookie receiver who flashed for them a little bit. So they're kind of an odd team. And I felt this take had more teeth when Dave Canales was going to come back as the offensive coordinator, and he doesn't now, but he's not going to now because he's head coach of the Panthers. My thought about saying this is that don't immediately write the Bucs off as just like, they won the NFC South last year, but kind of a fluky old team on their last gasp. Like I think there's more of a core for this team to build around on both sides of the ball than you might think.
It's a good point. I'll also say that like, Cade Otton was really good by the standards of that position as a rookie and had some games where he really backed it up this year. Trey Palmer was one of those guys that, you know, just accidentally on by virtue of the fact that I watch a lot of Big Ten West football, I saw a lot of him in college.
Sicko.
And he stood out on a team that did not throw the ball well at Nebraska, right? And so maybe not a huge shock to see him have some really nice moments as a rookie. I don't think that Trey Palmer necessarily is going to be a star receiver down the line, but a really good pro for a long time. I think he might be. So this is a good point and an interesting point. Like they're I think you're right. The cupboard is not as bare as it seemed. And then man, you make it to the. I mean, you make it to the divisional round and you got to do everything you can to run it back. Like they're a division winner who made it, you know, who made it past a round in the playoffs. Like that's just a really impressive. That is a really impressive outcome for them. I don't know if we can get that season out of Baker Mayfield again, but he's not old. He's not,
right.
He's not yet in the Joe Flacco stage of his career where it felt like a total miracle. I mean, it was within the realm of possibility that he could have other good NFL seasons. So that was a really fun finish for them. And it's a good point to make that they are not necessarily just a dusty, decrepit team.
All right. You have one more to finish off, Andy.
Regrettably, it is also about the Packers. It is also I'm giving flowers to yet another Packers player. Not Jordan Love. I just want to mention that Aaron Jones.
I knew it.
Not dust at all. I could not have been more wrong about him coming into the year. I was really bullish on him. You know, he's a player who versatile skill set. Really, there's no situation in which Aaron Jones shouldn't be on the field for your team. And I was too bullish on him this year, but he was coming off like 5 years of top 12 finishes. But man, that guy, playoffs included, finished the year with 5 straight 100-yard rushing performances. 108 against the Niners, 118, obviously, with 3 touchdowns against Dallas. Averaged, but at the end of the day, averaged 5.2 yards per touch for the regular season. And he's been the best rusher in the postseason. He's actually been the best rusher in the postseason. Like 226 yards in a couple games, almost 6 yards per carry, 158 of those yards after contact. He's going to be 29 entering next year, but like that was the best version of Aaron Jones, and we saw it in the most important moments for the Packers. So. I think they have an out with him if they choose to take it, but I can't imagine that they're going to choose to take it. He's just like on a very young team. He feels like that veteran who's super important, to the vibe of the clubhouse and the vibe of the offense. And man, what a productive like month and a half it's been for him. He was super impressive down the stretch when healthy.
Yeah, producer Colin said in the chat he's the Travis Kelce of running backs. Where he's a guy that like you have to think about what he did in the postseason. And I don't know what they do with Aaron Jones next year. Like, this is a guy that they made take a pay cut last year, but it's the, and I know I've said this on the show before, but like, it's the classic thing with running backs now. Where it's like, yeah, you got to take a pay cut because the position you play, but like, oh my God, what are we going to do without Aaron Jones when he's on the field? I think that it would be kind of foolish to go into next season relying on Aaron Jones, but also he's so important to them. I don't think they can do the AJ Dillon thing again as his backup. Yeah. I believe he's a free agent as well. So yep. They need to think about running back next year, which is definitely a position to monitor for us. Cause if we love this offense, which we do clearly, we're going to want to know who Aaron Jones' backup is and if Aaron Jones is back on this team. And actually, Aaron Jones dovetails really nicely into my final thing. And this is something I knew from the regular season, but the playoffs really hammered it home for me, especially their playoff loss to the Baltimore Ravens. I probably care about what the Texans do at running back more than like any other running back situation this offseason, man. Because talk about a team that is set. I think set in the passing game. Nico Collins is a dog. He's a number one X receiver. I moved him in the top 15 of my dynasty wide receiver rankings, and I don't care. I feel great about that because he's awesome. And Tank Dell is really good. He's coming back from a big injury, but he's really, really good player. Like he can be a number one receiver. I think these guys are awesome. CJ Stroud rules. Bobby Slowick is back for a second season. They can add some receiver depth, sure, but they're good. Like at the top end of the passing game, they are good. And they have these guys all on rookie deals. Nico Collins, rookie deal. Tank Dell, rookie deal. Obviously, CJ Stroud, rookie deal. And I think Slowick at times was very insistent on establishing the run game. Maybe too much so. But it would sure look better if they had a better running back there. You know, like all these first and 10 runs that the nerds keep crushing Bobby Slowick for, those first and 10 runs are going to look a lot better if it's not Devin Singletary. I think Devin Singletary was fine at times this year. He was clearly a better system fit than Damian Pierce. By the way, like, don't go back and look at any August fantasy take about Damian Pierce. My God. he just is clearly not a fit for this system, not a fit with this staff. I bet we end up hearing from Damian Pierce somewhere down the line in his career because he can clearly play, just probably in a more in a power man gap scheme. And I say the Aaron Jones dovetails into it just because I went and just searched on Fantasy Points data suite about like who were the best zone blocking scheme running backs last year, because that's clearly what the Texans want to do. They want to be a zone heavy run team, and that was what Damian Pierce just didn't fit in. Aaron Jones, actually among guys with 100 carries, had the best success rate on zone runs last year. I don't think that he, again, I don't think the Packers are going to cut him, but like that would be an option. Shoot big at running back, I think, if you are the Houston Texans. You know, Tony Pollard, ironically, had the second best success rate on zone runs. Maybe he's an option for them, although his yards per carry wasn't very good, 3.97. DeAndre Swift was eighth in zone rushing success rate. He's going to be a free agent, 4.23. But like even a Saquon Barkley, right? Like Barkley was pretty good as a zone runner. I don't know if he's a perfect system fit necessarily, but you know, over 4 yards per carry on zone rushes, 141 carries, 581 yards, 3 touchdowns, 43.3% success rate. Like my point here is just that like there are going to be a lot of big names available on the running back market, as you mentioned. And if I'm the Texans, I would try to shoot high at running back because you are not paying any of these young passing game players at this point. Bring in a veteran running back, and I think that running game can really take another step in Houston.
Yeah, Pollard was, and maybe it's not the most exciting thing to Texans fans coming off the season that we just saw, but he was actually the first name that came to mind as you were talking, because there were fewer zone runs in the offense. We've talked about this before. Like this past year, he was so great at it the year before, right? Like that might actually be the highest and best use of Tony Pollard. And if we're going to get back to seeing like the best version of Tony Pollard, that might be it. Also, if I'm one of these running backs involved in this crazy like musical chairs game, and we still don't know who teams are going to be moving on from who aren't necessarily free agents, but like it's possible that like Kamara's in that discussion. Like there's a whole bunch of other big names that could still enter this conversation. man, Pollard would be a good one. But like these guys are going to be, I don't know, if I'm a veteran running back who's got one more shot, like in my prime at, you know, not only a contract, but like NFL success, get me to Houston is kind of how I feel. Like I want to be part of that party for the next like 5 years or so while they've got all these young receivers and I've got, you know, developmental years of Stroud, and it's just a minor miracle that they've been able to retain Slowick. And like, I don't know, this situation looks great next year and beyond. And I'd be trying to get there. If the money's even close to the same as it is somewhere else, get me to Houston.
Shoot. Our guy, Austin Eckler, 14th best zone rushing success rate. Yards per carry was horrendous, but 51.8% zone rushing success rate, 110 carries, as a zone rusher this past year. Among the guys, 100 plus carries on the season, 14th best zone rushing success rate. So, hey, maybe he's got one more push, down there in Houston. Yeah. If I'm somebody like that,
yeah,
I would definitely be trying to get myself to Houston. And look, by the way, they might just end up drafting a running back that they think is a good zone rusher. And we're all drafting the hell out of that guy too. My point here is just like, no matter who it is, I think they're probably going to be a better player than Devin Singletary, who, again, I don't want to crap all over Singletary. I think he's a solid NFL running back, but yeah, he's just clearly not the ace that they need. And by the way, clearly wanted in that running back room this past year. So, man, I think the loss to Baltimore, where the Ravens were, based on the defense they were playing, just begging them to run on them, like, please go ahead and run on us. And they tried, but Singletary just couldn't get it done. That run game wasn't very good. Certainly they can make some moves on the offensive line as well. But man, that loss to Baltimore really hammered it to me that I'm going to care about who the Texans acquire at running back this year, maybe more than any other place. Barkley, I do think Barkley would be very, very fascinating there as well. All right, Andy, we did it. We have solved all the mysteries that people need, the things that they needed to know from the playoffs. Now they know. Thank God, when all the other fantasy shows out there aren't including data points from the playoffs, we stepped up to the plate and saved the people for next year.
It's very well done. And now that I feel like we've really put a bow on literally every team that is not in the Super Bowl, people can just focus on the Super Bowl without having to trouble themselves with thoughts of the Packers or the Texans or the Bills or the Eagles or any of the other no longer contenders.
Great segue, because I definitely know people do feel they, during the 2 week lead up to the Super Bowl, they don't get enough Super Bowl content. They don't get enough focused pieces on just those two teams in the Super Bowl. That's certainly feedback that you get from people out there that consume football content. But Yahoo Fantasy's gonna be a big part of doing that, because just like the Chiefs and the 49ers, the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show is going to the Super Bowl. Super Bowl week in Vegas. That is, The Athletic and Yahoo's own Nate Tice is going to join me for a Super Bowl Stat Nerd preview pod next Tuesday. And yes, the aforementioned Austin Eckler is back. He's going to join me in Vegas for the season finale of Eckler's Edge on Thursday. We're also going to have a ton, and I mean a ton, of other content, interviews with A-list NFL superstars throughout the week. So be sure to follow me at @MattHarmon_BYB. And Yahoo Sports and Yahoo Fantasy on all of the socials, because there's going to be, I mean, some heaters, some verified bangers coming out of our Super Bowl week content. Until then, we're out.